Tim is gracious enough to fill in today as Cole has the youth off on Whirlwind Adventure. They're at a fall retreat is what they call it. And, you know, they do some fun things. Like I've seen a video where they're looking at dolphins and stuff. They're down near the coast, obviously. And then Caleb sent me a message and said, I've swallowed fire twice. And like they're roasting marshmallows and he doesn't blow it out. He's just been popping it in his mouth. I'm like, you ain't smart, son. But there's a lot of instructional time too, because I also got a video. Caleb didn't send me this one, Sierra did. Cole was speaking and he brought Caleb up on stage and he slapped Caleb across the face. I ought to pull the video up and let you see it. And the reason he slapped him, he didn't hurt him. Like Caleb was laughing as he was going off the thing. But I'm assuming, because they didn't send me the whole thing, where it goes on. So if where sin is there, grace abounds more. And so Cole says, hey, I'm just saved. And Caleb says, great. And so then Cole slaps him and says, oh, it's okay. Grace is going to cover that, or something to that effect. You know, using it as a visual illustration. I like visual illustrations. I like to see things. I like stories. I don't know how you like to perceive things. I think I've told you before, but stained glass windows were the ones with the pictures were meant to be visual representation. Before people could read a lot, they were supposed to be able to look at the pictures and see kind of the gospel story. Michael Katz, the one that did like Remember the Titans, Facing the Giants and Flywheel and those kind of things. He said they wanted to make movies kind of that, a way of visually telling things. Sometimes we have books, and this is kind of a leadership book, but it's Who Moved My Church, and it's kind of a fictional story about how churches seem to be moved, and it points out things that churches can fall in the habit of doing some bad things. But if you haven't noticed, it's easier to see sin in somebody else's life than your own life, at least for me. And so if we look at what these other churches, the problems that they had and what they got mad over, which it wasn't right in the first place, then it's easier. Then there's that moment where you say, oh, wait, do I do that? And so there's a way of communicating. In today's passage, Jesus is going to tell parables. Now, parables are, you're like, what's the difference between like a parable or a fable? Parables tell stories. But it's not just that you can see yourself in a character. Sometimes it's like that, but sometimes something stands for something else. Think about the tortoise and the hare. The tortoise and the hare, and they have actually done this. I saw like YouTube or Facebook or TikTok something, one of those little videos the last couple of weeks where they put a tortoise and a hare, and the tortoise really did win because the hare would jump out and then it would stop and look around, and the tortoise just kept going and it won. Of course, that teaches a lesson. That slow and steady wins the race, that you can't just be excited for a little bit and then stop, but perseverance. And Jesus teaches something in all of his parables. Now, what does Jesus teach in his parables, and how do we know if we're getting the right lesson out of it? Sometimes it's very helpful, and Jesus went on to explain it. But other times, we have to be careful that we listen to the Holy Spirit in this, because you can take it way too far. One prime example that a lot of times people throw out is the parable of the parable of the Good Samaritan. And they want to say that like the Levite is like the law, and the priest is the sacrifices. And then when he takes them to the inn stands for the church, and that's where you get your healing is in the church. And I think that's probably extending that a little too far. But there are lessons that are involved. Like in that case, it doesn't matter like your religious standing. It's the one that loved him is the one that, not the one that might have been expected to love him, but the one that actually did good for him. And so today we're going to look at the different parables that Jesus tells. And as we're looking at them, we're going to use the ones that we know for sure kind of what it means to help interpret some of the other areas and kind of fit it all together. I love puzzles. I love those logic puzzles where it like gives you seven things and you have to fill in the whole grid and find out who bought what pet on what day and those kind of things. But we're going to look at what it is that Jesus is teaching us through this teaching session, where he gives us a lot of analogies, a lot of stories that make a point. And so as we pick up in Matthew 13, Jesus has gone out and he's gathered the group around, and it says that he told them many things in parables in verse 3. And he said, consider the sower who went out to sow. As he sowed, some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. Other seed fell on rocky ground where it didn't have much soil, and it grew up quickly since the soil wasn't deep. But when the sun came up, it was scorched, and since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among thorns, and the thorns came up and choked it. Still other seed fell on good ground and produced fruit, some 100, some 60, and some 30 times what was sown. Let anyone to have ears, let him hear. Now, as we read that, and it starts talking about, okay, farmer goes out, throws seeds, and some of it comes up, some of it didn't. What is that even talking about? There has to be a context for what he's talking about for us to even make any idea of this, or else we could start saying, I mean, if Jesus had been talking to his carpenter buddies, he could have been saying something about, well, you go buy wood from Walmart and it's going to be cheap, but if you go to D's, it's going to be better quality. Like, the context determines everything. But Jesus, as he's teaching about the kingdom, Jesus, as he's relating to them, they already know spiritual matters. And for them, this is an agrarian society, like they agricultural society. They are familiar with seeds. And they are familiar that in that day, they did not have million-dollar tractors that you could set a GPS and it would put down, you know, two seeds, skip 2 inches, put down three seeds, skip 2 inches. Like, they didn't have the technology. And so they would take and they would just broadcast it. And of course, if you're broadcasting seed like that, it's going to fall on different types of soil. And so they would have been familiar with it. And coming from a teacher who has already been saying, you have heard it said, talking about the Old Testament, but now I say to you, everything that Jesus had taught, anytime Jesus sat them down to talk, he didn't have a TED talk on different matters. He kept his message on point. They knew you go to a Jesus talk, you go into a talk about salvation and God and the kingdom and what it means to be righteous. And so they already had their understanding of, hey, this is how we plant. And they already knew that if I'm listening to Jesus, it's going to be about something spiritual. And so they're already focused in. But we'll get back to what this parable means in a moment. But notice that last one, it says, let anyone who has ears listen. If you look in the book of Revelation at the end of all the letters to the churches, it always concludes with something along the lines of, let anyone who has ears to hear listen to what the Spirit says to the churches. There's a difference between listening and hearing and listening and what exactly goes on. And the disciples came up and said, why are you speaking in parables? And they said, the secrets of the kingdom of heaven have been given to you to know, but it hadn't been given to them. Anybody that has more will be given to him, and anyone will have more than enough. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. That is why I speak to them in parables, because looking they don't see, and hearing they don't listen or understand. Isaiah's prophecy is fulfilled in them, which says, you will listen and listen, but never understand. You will look and look, but never perceive. For this people's heart has grown callous. Their ears are hard of hearing, and they have shut their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn back, and I would hear them. Blessed are your eyes because they do see, and your ears because they do hear. For truly I tell you, many prophets and righteous people long to see the things you see but didn't see them, and to hear things but you did not hear them. So what is he talking about? Is he saying, I speak in parables so that those that understand will and those that don't understand won't? He's talking about the people's heart conditions. If you flip over to Matthew 21, Jesus told another parable and they got upset with him. The Pharisees got upset with him because they did understand. In Matthew 21:45, it says, when the chief priests and the Pharisees heard his parables, they knew he was speaking about them. Although they were looking for a way to arrest him, they feared the crowds. See, they understood the parable, at least to the degree that they knew that Jesus was talking about them. They understood the parable and what the parable's point was and who it was getting at, but they didn't hear the parable and that they did not want to hear. Their hearts were hardened. They might have understood, but they didn't want to understand. They didn't want to apply it to themselves. They were wanting to reject the message. And so he goes on, he says, you will listen and listen, but never understand. There's a difference between hearing and listening. And parents of teenagers especially know this. A lot of times you know that they can hear you, or for kids for that matter. You know they hear you, but they aren't listening to you. Wives, I'm going to go ahead and put your husbands in the same category. A lot of times you know that they hear you, but they aren't listening to you. It's like you're here, but you're not really here. They're it's kind of the peanuts. Like they aren't really truly listening. They aren't accepting. They aren't trying to focus in on what's going on. Seeing, but not really seeing. Have you heard the expression, I see you? I see you. Whenever somebody says, I see you, it doesn't just mean, I see you. It means it's pointing out something like, I see what you did, or I see where you're coming from. Like, I am looking at you with an intent. I see what's going on in your life. It's not that you're in my field of vision, but I actually see you. And so when he says that, when he tells them these parables, it's only those that are open in heart to listen. It's not that he's saying, I speak in parables because you are too dumb to understand anything but a story. He says, I'm speaking to you in such a way that you may get it, but you might not get it. You're like, what is that kind of duplicitous talking? Jesus, being the Word of God, I firmly believe could speak something in such a way that people could not deny the truth. He could speak something in such a way, with such authority, with such articulateness, that people had no choice but to believe. But he didn't tread upon their belief. That's why out of the 5 points of Calvinism or whatever you want to call it, Reformed theology, that's the one that I have the biggest problem with, is that there would be irresistible grace, because God gives us the choice to resist. I mean, in this passage right here, he talks about how the message is presented, yet those that hear, they hear, but they don't hear. And it comes down to the heart condition of the receptiveness. And I think that is backed up if you go on to when he starts explaining. Because he goes on to explain the parable of the sowers. And he says, look, here's what it is. There's four types of soil, right? There's the seeds cast. And some of it is hard and it doesn't do anything. And it is rejected wholeheartedly. The hard-heartedness of us, whenever the gospel message is presented, some people just reject it flat out and said, I don't want anything to do with that. I'm not listening to you. I don't care. He said, but then there's others that there's a very superficial. Maybe you'll stop and listen. And if you've witnessed to enough people or you've talked to enough people, sometimes people will sit down and they'll listen to you, but it's kind of going in one ear and out the other ear. They might be being polite, or they might say, huh, that's interesting, but they never stop and really think about it. They aren't convicted about it, and it really doesn't go anywhere. Then there's another group where it falls among the thorns. And here it would take root. It's so close. And these people do not end up getting saved, but for a little while they're like, man, that's pretty good. And they start hanging out with a Christian crowd, and they start doing some Christian things, and it's like it almost catches on. But the problem is that they are too worldly, and it would have to give up too much. They would have to step out too far on faith. And something about the world chokes out what God is convicting and calling them of, yet it does not take seed, it does not take root, it does not come, and it gets choked out. But then there's a fourth group that falls on good soil, and this one hears and understands the word, and it produces fruit, some 100, some 60, some 30 times what was sown. Whitfield is famous for being asked at the end of one of his revivals, so how many people got saved, or how many, you know, he said, I don't know, I'll tell you in a few years. In the Bible, it talks about that someone should not aspire to a position until they have proven themselves in the faith. Over and over again in the Bible, it talks about continuing in your faith or persevering to the end. And part of that relates back to this. Because if someone is saved, if they are truly saved, if they are the good soil that does bear fruit, they will be bearing fruit. They will be showing signs of righteousness. They will be redeemed. They will, the ones that are actually Christians, there will be growth that is involved there. And they're the only ones that are truly saved. But in all these four soils, notice that there were several categories that rejected, or that said the cost is too high, or I don't want to do that, or I don't know, maybe later. He goes on and tells them another parable, and this time the parable is of the kingdom. The kingdom heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while people were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and left. When the plant sprouted and produced grain, then the weeds also appeared. And the homeowner's servants came to him and said, Master, didn't you sow good seed in your field? Then where did the weeds come from? An enemy did this, he told them. So do you want us to go and pull them up? The servant asked him. No, he said, when you pull up the weeds, you might also uproot the wheat with them. Let's both grow together until the harvest. At harvest time, I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first and tie them in bundles to burn them, but collect the wheat in my barn. Now, there's another agricultural-based thing. I told you, agricultural society. These are the kind of images that really connect. If you listen to different kinds of music, if you like country music, you probably live in the country. If you like some other types of music, you probably live in the city. Like, it connects to who we are as people, is what we connect with. And here he's connecting with them through what they're familiar with. They're familiar maybe not with people sowing being so mean that they sow weeds among somebody else's plant. Man, that's a next level hate, you know? Like, I'm all about rolling yards. I know we're past Halloween and everything, but I'm all about rolling yards, not egging houses. But you want to go toilet paper our yard, go for it. I'm probably going to go roll your house too. It's fine. Like, to me, that's just good-natured fun. I don't like, it's not destructive. It doesn't really do anything. But here, I mean, they're trying to destroy the man's crops. And so already we're thinking, maybe in your mind you're thinking, who could be so hateful? Man, that's the devil, dude. Well, yeah, that's right. That's the devil, dude. And maybe you're already thinking, so they're not, people didn't necessarily do that, but they were familiar with weeds growing up amongst the wheat, amongst what you wanted, the grains that you wanted. If you have a flower bed, you know what I'm talking about. If you have a garden, vegetable garden, you know what I'm talking about. If you have a yard, you know what I'm talking about. There's good grass, and then there's some weeds that pop up. And you want the weeds out, but inevitably, whenever you are pulling weeds or if you're hoeing in the garden, you got to be very careful, because so easy it is to rip out the good also. And so sometimes it's good just to let it grow up there. And so we know that, but once again, Jesus is going to interpret this one. But in the meantime, he's going to have a couple of more parables that kind of help us understand. He's presented them another parable. Kingdom of heaven's like a mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field. It's the smallest of the seeds, but when grown, is taller than the garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the sky come and nest in its branches. Now here, this parable Jesus doesn't interpret, so we'll go ahead and talk about it. The kingdom of heaven, he's been talking about the kingdom of heaven. He said, the secrets of the kingdom of heaven have been given to you. And then he said, when he started talking about the sower, he said, when anyone hears and understands about the kingdom of heaven, he presented them another parable, the kingdom of heaven. He's talking about the kingdom of heaven. And the kingdom of heaven is God's rule, God's reign. God reigns over all creation, but there's a special way in which he reigns. He can reign in our hearts. He can reign in the church. He can reign in lots of different ways. And so the reign is the submitting to him, submitting to his authority. And so all of this is talking about us submitting to his authority, giving ourselves over to him. And here he compares it to a mustard seed that starts out small but grows big. It takes over, if you will. It takes over so that then what once was small, now everything else can kind of hinge on it or hold on it. Starts out so small that a bird would eat a bunch of them over the course of a meal. But then those same birds, once it's grown, those birds come and rest on it. And so now it has become something that everything else rests upon. And that's the kingdom. The kingdom of heaven started small with Jesus and then with his 12 disciples, and then it went throughout all the earth. And it's gotten big, and that's true. But if you think back to the kingdom reigning part, it takes over, and something that seems so small influences and takes over everything. Kind of along those lines, he told him a parable that the kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and mixed into 50 pounds of flour until it was all leaven. It takes over all of life. Because if you do any bread recipes, and I try and make bread bowls for potato soup and stuff, and it calls for like 3 tablespoons of yeast for 7 cups of flour. Little bit of yeast, whole lot of flour, yet it takes over and influences the whole thing. And as he's talking about the kingdom, as he's talking about the reign of Christ, there is no part of our lives that Christ does not impact. You might say, well, it's just a decision to follow Christ. It's just putting my faith in God, but that takes over everything. I brought an example of how a little bit can mean a lot. This is one of my pepper plants. I have several pepper plants, but this is one of them. And these are full-size peppers you see on there. They're a little bitty. Here you go, Bucky. Go ahead and eat that. Now, actually, I wouldn't mind somebody eating it. And if you want one, there's a handful that are good for later. And they're hot, but they're not too hot. Like, I literally take them and just put them in my mouth. But that little bitty pepper, it can pack a pretty big punch. In fact, compared to a bell pepper, that has more heat in it than a bell pepper does. Bell peppers can be this big. That's very little bitty. But yet, this has a lot more heat in it. And we think about how the kingdom of heaven, we think about what part is that? Like we come to church one time a week. Or we say that this decision to follow Christ, man, this is the best decision, the best singular decision of your life. Well, there are some things you do every day. There are some things you do multiple times a day. But this one decision has a greater impact than any of that. This one point in your life. When you have your birthday, sure, but when you have your second birthday, it impacts every part of your life. He's not the God of Sunday mornings. He's not even if you come back on Sunday night or if you come back on Wednesday night, he's the God of all times at all places. And so the leaven that is there, it is the kingdom of God giving the reign of Christ and saying, God, you are on the throne of my life. It is a reign that doesn't just take part of different aspects. God isn't separated out like we have the judicial, executive, and legislative branches. It's not like God only has one of those. But so God, you're in charge of like a third of my life, and my job's in charge of a third of my life, and my recreation or my family's in charge of it. No, God said he's the only part. It's God takes in and he takes over, and the reign of Christ influences every single thing. You don't say, God, you can have everything but my finances. God, you can have everything but my recreation. God, you can have anything but my vacation. You can have anything but my house. You can have anything but my... No, it's God comes over and he takes over everything. And so that decision to follow Christ, that belief that we have in him, it might seem like one thing, but it takes over everything. Rightfully so. That's why there is no part-time or superficial Christians. Superficial Christians, go back to this, they're probably not really one of the saved ones. And you're like, how can they not really be one of the saved ones? Didn't they say that they're a Christian? Didn't they say that? Well, that goes back to the parable Jesus has already been talking about. Going back to the parable about the wheat and the weeds, there are a lot of people that are amongst the true believers that aren't really. There are a lot of people that are kind of like that third kind of soil, that worldliness is really choking them out, and that worldliness, they are really a pretty good pretender, but they're not the real deal. And so he's talking about how if Christ isn't Lord over all of our life, if he doesn't grow and expand, if the mustard seed that starts growing to where once it might have been something you fed upon, now if it's the resting place for everything else, if your life isn't resting upon Christ's reign in your life, then it's not what it's supposed to be. And you got to ask, is it wheat? Is it a weed? Are you a weed? Because he goes on and he interprets the wheat and the weeds. And he says, the one who sows is the Son of Man, and the world is the good seeds and the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one. See, there's going to be bad amongst all the good. There's going to be bad in that. We talked about how could anybody be so mean as to see discourse in the midst of what somebody's trying to have their livelihood on? That's what the devil did. We need Christ as our Savior, but the devil's going to be throwing seeds of dissent, seeds of weeds, and trying to choke out the good in our lives, trying to choke out God in our lives. The one that sowed them is the devil. And at the end of the age, the weeds are going to be gathered and burned in the fire, and so it will be at the end of the age. All those that are the weeds, those that are pretenders, will be taken out. Then the Son of Man and his angels will gather the kingdom, all who call sin and guilty and lawlessness, and they will throw them into the blazing furnace, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in their Father's kingdom. Let anyone who has ears listen. Once again, listen. Like, not just do you understand it or not, because I think it's straightforward, but are you going to be convicted? Or are you going to listen to it? Because you see, just because you're not taken out doesn't mean you're okay. God allows sinful people to continue to live. God even allows sinful people sometimes to thrive in this worldliness. But that still doesn't change a weed into wheat. It doesn't matter. And so you might, you don't rest in your, I'm okay because if that man, God would have taken me out by now. Know this, that there is a time when God will say there will be a day of reckoning. He goes on and says, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure buried in a field that a man found and reburied. Then in his joy, he goes and sells everything he had and he buys the field. And another one that's very similar to it, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls. When he found one priceless pearl, he went and sold everything he had and bought it. Now, Jesus doesn't explain this to him, but a treasure that is worth more than anything on this earth. A pearl that is worth anything that we have. And the question to you today is, do you find God that treasurable? Do you love him, as Brother Tim saying, enough? Do you love him? See, it's one thing for us to say, oh, I'll be like Abraham. You know, I bet this is like Abraham. You had to be willing to give it up, but God's not really going to make you do it. Oh, you had to be like Abraham whenever he would sacrifice Isaac. Oh, yeah, I'll sacrifice Isaac, but I don't think he'll ever make me do it. So, yeah, I'll say it because I'm never going to have to really back it up. But yet we don't even give up partial things. We don't even give up some things. We always have to start with making sure that I have enough time to fit God in. I have to have enough finances to fit God in. I have to have enough energy to fit God in. And we say that we would be willing to give it up for God. We say that we would count the cost and surrender all because God's more valuable to us than any of that. But yet in the day-to-day life, we continually sell out. We continually don't have God as our greatest treasure. See, it's easy to see in these examples. That's one reason why he used parables. It's easy to see in this example how somebody loved the pearl so much, he sold everything for it. He loved the treasure so much, he sold everything for it. And the question is, are you willing to sell everything for God? Because it's not as visible. It's something that we've got to be accountable to. It's something that we have to know in our hearts that he is our greatest treasure. We aren't treasuring sleeping late and hitting the snooze button more. We're not treasuring watching one more reel on our TikTok or whatever more than spending time with him. We aren't loving being able to go eat at a nice restaurant more than doing what he wants us to do. We aren't loving our freedoms that we've gotten to at this point in our life. We aren't loving our comfort to where when he asks us to do something hard, it's like, well, God must not be asking me to do that because that would be hard. God asks us to do hard things. He wants us to sacrifice. He wants us to show and demonstrate how he is a greater treasure than anything this world has to offer. That third group, why? Because the thorns, the prickly things, this world got in the way of them wholesalingly giving themselves to God. And so once again, he gives another parable and says, look, it's like dragging in a bunch of fish. Some of them are good and some of them are worthless. They're all going to be drug in at the same time. And then we're going to get rid of the bad ones. And they're going to be thrown once again in the blazing of furnace where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And he goes on and finishes with this last kind of parable. Have you understood all of this? And they answered yes. Now earlier he said, those of you that are his disciples, the secrets of the kingdom of heaven have been given to you. He said, you are disciples. If you understand this, if you have eyes to see, if you have ears to hear, if your heart is conditioned to where you not only understand, but you believe it, he says, then you are a teacher of the law who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven. It's like the owner of a house who brings out his storeroom, treasures new and old. Here we have the Great Commission in parable form, saying, if you are, if you have ears to hear, if you have eyes to see, if you are the one of the ones that are in, if you are the one of the ones that believe, then you're a disciple and you have been given treasure, the treasure of life, the treasure of the gospel, and you will go share those things. You will bring out of what God has given you. You will bring out things new and old, the Old Testament, the New Testament. You will bring out and share this treasure that you have, how great is our God, and you will sing it out and say it out and share it out. You see, that's once again, because that ties back into where we started. There was this seed that fell on the ground, and the only ground that was good, the only ground that was actually a believer, was the fruit. It produced fruit some 60, 30, or 100 fold. You see, the good ground, the seed that Israel, the believers that are disciples, if you are a disciple, you are a disciple maker. And if you fail to make disciples and you say it's somebody else's job, then it's everybody's job who is saved. So if you're saying it's somebody else's job, then you're saying it's one of those saved people, I'm one of the pretenders. If you're saying it's somebody else's job to talk about Jesus and to speak about Jesus, if you think it's somebody else's job to understand salvation well enough to share it with somebody else, do you understand what it means to be saved and what it takes to be saved? If you are a believer, then you say you understand it. And so now just go tell it to people. It may not be the most eloquent, but you know what? Sometimes the most eloquent isn't the best answer. Sometimes it takes hearing it from somebody, mainly you. Be willing to share. I don't know if I fully believe this analogy. Here's an analogy that I was hit with earlier. So talking backstage, I asked Izzy's parents, I said, has she told horror stories about our kid? Because Izzy babysits our kids. And she says, no, they're good. They're such good listeners. And I said, what is your secret? They don't listen to me. Well, maybe there are some people who will never listen to me. Maybe your friend will not listen to me because there are a lot of people, whenever they hear I'm a preacher, they immediately shut down and they don't want to hear it anymore. But they might listen to you. Maybe there are people that I know I tend to ramble. I use too many seven-letter words. There's a whole lot of faults I can point out with how I talk and communicate and everything else. And so maybe people won't listen to me. But God didn't call me personally to reach every single person that gets saved. He called you to reach some of them. And if you are a believer, then you are a disciple of Him. If you have ears to hear and you have eyes to see, then God's also going to give you a tongue to speak. And if you are a believer, you will do that. If you truly are a believer, then you will treasure Him more than somebody laughing in your face. If you truly are a believer, then you will treasure Him more than the time you're going to lose watching your shows or reading your books or doing whatever it is, going on your walks or whatever it may be. If you truly are a believer, then He becomes your greatest treasure. He is your prize above everything else. He is the only one that can fulfill the hole that's in your heart. He is worth it all. He is Lord of all. The kingdom of God is God's reign, and is God reigning in your life today? Not is He a part of my life, is He all of your life? Not is he one of the voices I listen to, is He the only voice that it matters, the only opinion that counts? Is He first in your life? Is He preeminent in your life? In Colossians, that's how Paul spoke of it. He says that He has come to, that He might come to have preeminence in all things. That He might come to have preeminence. You see, as a disciple of Jesus, as a follower of Jesus, He says, "Count the cost and follow Me." Period. Is that where you are? Whether you have it in story form of all these parables, whether you have somebody just stand up and say, you're a sinner, you need a Savior. To get saved, you need to place your faith in Jesus. Whether you have somebody sing it, some of the songs we sang today talked about it also. Whether you need a visual representation, we've had Judgment House, the kids did a great job earlier today showing it. There, maybe you've seen somebody with some lifestyle evangelism. God communicates us to in a lot of different ways. The question is, are we going to listen? Are we going to see? Are we going to believe? So I pray this morning that you have heard the gospel message. I pray today that those of us that are Christians have seen, how he is calling us to be disciple makers, that we will see that he is the pearl of great price, that he is the treasure that is worth more than anything else. And I hope that we will see in what it is that that what it is he talked about, how we give him our whole lives. And we say, God, you are Lord of the world. Be Lord in my life. If you don't know how to be saved, please come talk to me today. Because there is no greater treasure, there's no greater joy. There's nothing else. But if you are a Christian today, if you call yourself a Christian today, make sure that you're not deluding yourself and you haven't been playing fake for a number of years. But even if you are sure that you are a Christian, make sure you ask yourself, I know I'm a Christian, but there's a lot of things I've been treasuring above you, God, and I need to get that right and surrender those things to him and say, God, be the number one and only Lord of my life.